retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for today's edition of Education Matters. As a result of the Racine Unified School Board being divided into nine districts by the Wisconsin State Legislature for its spring 2016 election, I am interviewing the two candidates for District 6, John Heckenlively and Jim Venturini, and the two candidates for the District 7 seat, Don Nielsen and Brian O'Connell. Mr. Nielsen is the only incumbent of these four candidates. The two candidates for District 6 and 7 will be voted on in the April 5th general election. The top vote getter for each district in the April 5th election will take a seat on the Racine Unified School Board later in April. By the way, the District 6 winner receives a 2-year term and the District 7 winner a 1-year term. Welcome District 6 candidates John Heckenlively and Jim Venturini and District 7 candidates Don Nielsen and Brian O'Connell to Education Matters. Before we get started, I want to thank you each for making yourselves available to sit on Racine Unified's 9-member school board. As a former Racine Unified School Board member, I have a sense of the commitment each of you is making as school board members. And before we get started, would someone from your district briefly describe your district for our listeners? So, John Heckenlively, District 6.
Sure. The 6th district, it's basically River North. So it's the lake, English Street, basically Martin Luther King Drive, down to State, downtown. And downtown to 11th, 12th, it varies, but down to around 11th or 12th. And then pretty much straight west from downtown out to about Park High School.
Okay.
That's the rough boundaries.
Okay, Jim, do you want to add to that at all?
That's a, like you said, good rough boundaries. It's kind of jags out the towards Park High School and, of course, the lake on the east and English on the north and 11th on the south.
Okay, and District 7 then, Don Nielsen, will you describe that for our listeners?
District 7 basically is the takes up on the northern side of District 6 and goes up along the lake from English Street to roughly where North Street would come across. North Street is the top northern boundary between the lake and LaSalle. You come south down LaSalle to Melvin, and then you go out to across Mount Pleasant, and then it gets interesting because we go over to High Street, back up to Northwestern and across Northwestern all the way to looking over Island Park. And we come back around along the river. We go down Spring Street until we get, we include the area around Lutheran High School and around McKinley Middle School and somewhere, wherever, the 6th district on Martin Luther King and Hamilton on the south side.
Okay. And people can go to the Racine Unified website and get information on that. You have to go to www.rusd.org and then go to the school board information. At the bottom of that, it has 2016 election and proceed from there. And that will you take the steps and that will get you to which district you are in. Okay. Each candidate will have up to 1.5 minutes for an opening statement and 1.5 minute for a closing statement. In the remainder of this program, I will ask the questions. So that our listeners then will begin to know you, give us your name, a brief summary of your background in terms of education and work experience, and tell us why you should be elected to represent your district on the Racine Unified School Board. And we'll start then, John Heckenlively, with you from District 6.
Okay. I'm John Heckenlively. And my educational background, I have a bachelor's degree in political science. I have a master's degree in history. So I trained to be a social studies teacher at UWM. And I'm running because, part of this being is looking into being a teacher myself is, I've always had a deep concern about education, and is part of it, it's not just being a big D Democrat, but as a small D Democrat, is really believing that education is the foundation for democracy in the United States, well, everywhere, but certainly in the United States, is that without an educated populace, without people being able to understand how the process works and being able to critically examine how government works and how politics works, is that we're going to lose democracy in this country. And the other thing I've been focusing on is that really there's been an assault on public education, both nationally and certainly in Wisconsin in recent years. And so I think it's really critical to have people on the Board of Education who strongly believe in public education, who will work to protect schools and improve public schools.
Okay.
And that's what I'd be committed to.
Thank you, John Heckenlively. Our second candidate in District 6 is Jim Venturini. Jim?
Good morning. Yes, my name is Jim Venturini. I was born and raised here in Racine. I attended UW Parkside before buying my business when I was 20 years old. I own the Genghis Formalwear franchises. We expanded to an 11-store operation, and at the peak of the business, I employed up to 60 employees. So I want to take, and I'm happily married to my wife Carmela for 28 years and have two young boys. But I want to take that experience that I've had in being a business leader and working with people to help solve or help improve the school system in the city of Racine. What I really truly believe is that businesses, you know, we need to attract businesses to come to this area, and we need to have an educated workforce for the businesses that we currently have here. So we have to have our students prepared either for college or for a career. And we have to have them ready to get out into society and become give back and be assets to our city. I love Racine. I've been here my whole life, and I want to improve in any way that I can.
Okay, thank you, Jim Venturini. Those are our two candidates from District 6. Now to District 7, and our first candidate then is Don Nielsen.
Good morning. My name is Don Nielsen. I'm a lifelong resident of Racine. I went to Pratt McKinley and graduated from Park in 1964. After that, I went to the University of Wisconsin Racine Center, which has now become Parkside. I graduated with a bachelor's degree in sociology. Later went on to UW Oshkosh to get my master's degree in education, specializing in guidance. I spent 30 years working for the school district in at-risk programming at what was formerly called the Academy, and then the MAC Center, and now it's Turning Point Academy in Alternative Education. I ran for school board 10 years ago because I wanted to really look towards more accountability and transparency in the system and to raise student achievement. I'm running for another term because I want to continue what I've started, but I especially want to look at maintaining transparency both within the district and without, and also guide us through the initial spending of our referendum. I've been very concerned about our facilities for a long time, and I'm looking forward to setting up a 10-year plan, and that will be part of my emphasis. Thank you,
Don Nielsen. Then our second candidate from District 7, Brian O'Connell. Brian?
Thanks, Duane. I'm Brian O'Connell. I am 13 years the director of city development for the city of Racine. I retired in July. During that time with the city, I became aware quickly that the reputation of Greater Racine is inextricably tied to the reputation of the Racine schools. We'd often encounter business people asking about whether there were work-ready graduates of the schools or whether the schools were of high enough quality for employees to enroll their children into the schools. So knowing that Racine in general, Greater Racine, can't advance without advancing the schools, that's what brought me into this at this time. I think I bring a perspective of the my background in city governance, working with boards and commissions, trying to forge consensus among parties to make decisions. I've been on both sides of the table as an appointee and also as a staff person, and I think I bring those skill sets to the board. I think we're in a critical juncture, and that, you know, the board and the schools are under high scrutiny from the public, from the legislature, and it is time to move forward on key improvements.
Okay, thank you, Brian O'Connell. Those then were the two candidates from District 7. Now then, we'll move on to next question, and for the remaining questions, each one has 1 minute to answer. And Don, we're going to start with you then, because we started then with the candidates from District 6 for the opening statements. So the question then is, there are plans underway to change the high school curriculum next year to focus on career academies to better prepare students for the world of work as well as higher education. As a result, the plan is that Racine's high schools will move to block scheduling next school year with 1.5-hour classes as opposed to 50-minute classes under the current schedule. However, the Racine Education Association and other concerned citizens feel this shift to block scheduling should be delayed a year so that teachers will have more time to prepare their curricula for the extended class periods under block scheduling. In fact, one school board member candidate has suggested block scheduling only for the freshman class next year. What are your thoughts on block scheduling next year? And we start with Don Nielsen from District 7.
I personally think that we haven't gotten to the point of being able to implement it soon enough with our professional development. Our teachers have not been given development at this time on how to switch to a block format, and there is no requirement that they have all their training prior to the beginning of next year. So we could have a block of teachers that have not prepared themselves going into next year. I also think that we're in the process of implementing a new software program. We're looking at a new way of placing special education students in the classroom. We're looking at a new way of taking attendance. And we're trying to move to level 2 of positive behavioral intervention systems. And that's an awful lot of things to bite off at one time. So I would be one that would favor waiting.
Okay, thank you, Don Nielsen. And the second candidate from District 7 on this question, Brian O'Connell.
Well, this is one of the places where Don and I disagree. I would move to immediate implementation of block scheduling. I think it's an essential component of the academies of Racine. I also think that this is not an innovation in academics. Union Grove, a community that we lose students to, has had block scheduling for 20 years. This is not an innovation. I think if we don't make the move, we're going to be falling behind our peers as school districts. And remember that block scheduling, the 90-minute class, allows a deeper dive into the subject matter for the student. It allows the teacher to get to know the student better. So it is going to produce, I think, in the short run, benefits for the students and for the overall school district.
Okay, thank you, Brian O'Connell. On to District 6 then, and we'll start with Jim Vantarini then on this same question. Jim?
Yes, I would also agree and think that we should implement the block scheduling as soon as possible. Something that was mentioned was that it allows the students to become more involved in their class throughout the day, even with possible working with their fellow students better understand a subject that they may otherwise struggle with. Gives them an opportunity to get to know the teacher better, and I think it helps them to keep their day more organized. Jumping from class to class every 50 minutes, they can focus on the subject matter at hand for that day. And again, maybe allowing them to see what they might want to do with their lives afterwards. And, you know, get an idea of once they get deep into a project, be able to raise their spirits, let's say, so they want to maybe go after a career in a particular subject. So I think it just gives them more time to be more involved, and I think it's time to move forward.
Okay, John Hacken-Lively from District 6 on this same question. John?
Yeah, well, we're talking about this last month, but I think the research is varied. There are districts where block scheduling has worked well. There's other districts, largely urban districts, where it hasn't, and in some cases it's worked so badly that they've switched back to the old system. And so I think before we launch into a major curriculum shift like this, I think it's really important to sit down and look and see, okay, exactly how are we implementing this and what are the implications for? And I happen to agree with Don, is I think that there hasn't been nearly enough professional development time to give staff time to, you know, set up their curriculum and set up their teaching to be prepared for this next fall. And also there are going to be changes that students have to adjust with and parents have to adjust with. And I think that until we get everybody on the same page is that we should hold off on this.
Okay. Thank you so much then for your answers then to this question. On to the next question. And we'll start with Jim Venturini on this one. More students are leaving Racine Unified through vouchers to attend private and parochial schools. I recently read in the Racine Journal Times that 61% of students at St. Catherine's High School in Racine were there on vouchers, and 99% used vouchers to attend an area elementary school. Vouchers are also available statewide to attend some private and parochial schools. In addition to the cost to the state and its taxpayers, we're only now beginning to get information about how well these students are doing so parents and taxpayers can make decisions based on solid data. Can Wisconsin afford to support two education systems, and what then needs to be done? And Jim Venturini from District 6 will start with you.
Well, you know, I believe that parents should have the choice of where they want to send their children and for school. And so this obviously allows for that. I do also agree that, you know, we do have to have better data to see how they're doing in these schools and whether or not the education is being improved. I think ultimately it creates a competitive situation which causes reason for improvement in our school system overall. So again, with that choice, you know, we are always then driving to provide the best possible education we can for our students at the other schools, and I think ultimately it'll improve our school systems.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And then John Heckenlively from District 6.
Well, I think that to a large extent, voucher schools have been an ideologically driven attack on public education. Is that they are specifically designed as a method to take money out of public schools, weaken public schools, so that opponents of public education can therefore point and say, "Ah, the schools are failing." And so I've witnessed this firsthand because, you know, I was in Milwaukee in the 1980s when the whole voucher movement started, and I think you've had a whole lot of situations up in Milwaukee where, you know, you've had fly-by-night operators who come in, take the money, and once they've soaked as much money as they can, they leave the kids high and dry. And so I think vouchers, to a large extent, have had a negative impact on Wisconsin.
Okay, thank you, John Heckenlively. We move on to our District 7 candidates, and we'll start then with Brian O'Connell on this one. Brian?
When vouchers were created, the justification was that it would allow students to escape failing schools and go to better quality schools. I don't believe that has happened, and I believe what you cited, Duane, has been the more common experience that children are going right into non-public schools, parochial schools, using vouchers. So the legislature created the program. They have their reasons for wanting it. My position would be that they should recraft the program so that monies aren't passing through or from Unified and other school districts to support vouchers. Create it independently if it is intended to be that kind of a program.
Okay, thank you, Brian O'Connell. And our final candidate then, Don Nielsen from District 7.
Vouchers have been around for some time. We now have recently released scores comparing the Voucher schools in Racine to Racine Public Schools, and the Voucher schools scores came in below the Racine Unified School District average. My main concern with Vouchers is that Racine is being singled out from every place else in the state of Wisconsin. In Racine, you can have up to 3 times poverty level income. In other words, a family of four earning $72,000 qualifies for a voucher. Racine is the only district in the state of Wisconsin where, that has an unlimited number of vouchers available to the community. Every other school district has a limit of only 4% of their student population. That means that Racine is being unfairly, I believe, penalized by the voucher system, because we have to provide vouchers to more people, and we have to provide people with a much higher income a voucher. I also think that the voucher schools need to be managed and reviewed by the same standards. They must take the same students the school district does, and they should not be able to return them back and keep the money that a school district has given them to teach those students. If they are returned back to the public schools, I think the money should follow the student.
Okay, thank you, Don Nielsen. And that is, we conclude that with that question. And we move on to the next question. Brian O'Connell then is the first person to respond to this question. When the new Knapp Elementary School is opened in fall of 2016, it will be a community school. That is, a school that provides supplementary social services to its students, their families, and the neighborhood in which they are located. Given the extent of poverty in Racine Unified, should more elementary schools become community schools? And should this be funded by a referendum or in some other way? And we'll start with you, Brian O'Connell.
Well, I think Unified is in a unique and very positive position in that we have schools where the school attendance is drawn from the surrounding area. Knapp is one. In my neighborhood, Roosevelt is another. Overwhelmingly, the students who attend can walk to the school. And I think there is a opportunity, which I endorse, and I think we should try to expand for those schools to serve the broader community. There are a number of initiatives right now, whether it's assisting family assets or others, that piggyback on entire families, trying to provide the families with support that will ultimately advance the students' performance. I would hope to see this expanded to other schools in the community, particularly those which serve an attendance area.
Okay, thank you, Brian O'Connell. And Don Nielsen, then, from District 7, the second to respond to this question. Don?
Yes, I'm very much excited about the community schools. I think they will be a very significant means of engaging more, not just students, but parents and other people in the community in the neighborhood schools. There are many studies that show that one way to raise student achievement is to engage the student in the school and the parent in the school. Having a school that is open possibly 7 days a week with a library, possible medical services, cafeteria program, and a variety of other possibilities is an extremely good way of bringing people into the program and making them involved in the school. We are working with United Way at this time very closely, and they are covering some of the cost of the programming. I see this as a win-win for the United Way and for the school district. I think if we could expand it to other schools, it would be a fantastic opportunity, and I would look for more business, nonprofit cooperation to help fund those programs.
Okay, thank you, Don Nielsen. Then we move on now to the candidates from District 6, and John Heckenlively will start with you on this question.
Yeah, I'm real excited about this because I think I'm a big advocate for community schools. I think, you know, in cities that have set up community school models, is they've been real successful, is it's done a lot to build community support for public schools. And first and foremost is it helps kids and it helps parents. Is it provides a situation where you're taking the stress off kids so that they're in a better position to learn, and it takes stress off parents, provides them with services so they're in a better position to help their kids. So I think it'd be great to have more community schools. And I think in terms of the referendum thing, I think a referendum would probably pass by huge margin because I think one reason people are frustrated about paying taxes is they don't think they're getting anything for them. If they actually see, okay, yeah, is we're passing a referendum and we're getting better schools out of it, they'd be all for it.
Okay, thank you then, John Heckenlively. Jim Venturini then from District 6 on this question.
Yeah, I love the idea of the community schools. Again, anything that would inspire more parent involvement, the tie to the local community. I think it's just a sense of pride, you could say. So I think it would be wonderful, like I said, for the families to be more involved. It's going to help improve the education of our kids. I would have to admit that I'd have to do a little more. If I were to be on the board, a little more research as far as understanding the whole cost of it all and how we would be able to pay for this. But I think that, in theory, I think it's a wonderful idea.
Okay. Thank you so much to all four of you, then, for your answers to this question. We move on to the next question, then. I recently heard a school board member say that people in the inner city don't vote. One of the recent developments on the Racine Unified School Board has been for their legislative committee under Julie McKenna's leadership to meet from time to time with the leaders of area communities such as Caledonia, Mount Pleasant, and so forth. Would that be a good idea to extend that activity to two or three inner-city neighborhoods through churches in those areas or the police department's cop houses in order to encourage voting? What can be done, I guess, to encourage voting by people in, say, in the inner city of Racine? And we'll start then with John Heckenlively on this question.
Well, since those are pretty much the entire constituency of District 6, as I think Jim and I would say, yeah, we would certainly enjoy seeing more people voting. I mean, I've been doing my part to an extent. I'm out hitting the doors, talking with people, and been getting a good response. In terms of Julie, I think she's done some good work reaching out. And, yeah, I do think that the board, and certainly it's something I would be just interested in doing as an individual member, is, have regular meetings at community centers, at schools, invite parents in the local community in to sit down and discuss issues. And I think a big part of it is I think if people feel ownership, is if they feel that, okay, local officials do care about our input, about what our community is going through, is that then they'll be more likely to vote because, they want to encourage people who actually care about them.
Okay, thank you, John Heckenlively. Jim Venturini on this same question.
Yeah, John hit it on the head. That's the bulk of our voting base. Absolutely. I think if we can find ways to get to the community centers, to the churches, I have been having some discussions with a number of the pastors in our district. And if there's just ways that we can, I don't want to use the word educate them, but make them more aware of what is at stake and the importance of their vote. Everybody in this in this country has the right to vote when of legal age, and we need to make them more aware of what's at stake for them and what it means to them.
Okay, thank you, Jim Venturini. Now on to the candidates from District 7. Don Nielsen, we'll start with you on this question.
I think it would be a great idea. The school board in the past has gone out into schools within the city and met with parents using the school format, but I think it would be a fantastic opportunity to meet in churches or neighborhood centers and bring up the changes that we are thinking of doing. The school board is going to have to establish a 10-year model with 5 and 3 year plans within it. I think this would be a great opportunity for starting such meetings, is to get input as to what do people feel should be the direction, where should we be building schools, what is needed, what needs to be changed. And I think the city would be a great place.
Okay. Thank you, Don Nielsen, on that. And our final candidate on this question, Brian O'Connell from District 7. Brian?
Well, I agree completely that the school board needs to outreach to the community. I think I'm in a good position to help with that, having served as development director, where we were both under requirements that we reach out for city plans and programs and obtain public involvement, as well as my own, you know, personal contacts that I've established in working with churches and working with community groups throughout the city. So it's something I look forward to, the role I look forward to playing on the board.
Okay. Thank you, Brian O'Connell, and all four of you then for your answers to this question. Then we move on and then let me indicate at this time that I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to a special edition of Education Matters, in which I'm interviewing the two candidates for the District Seat 6 on Racine Unified School Board, John Heckin-Lively and Jim Vantarini, and the two candidates for the District 7 seat, Don Nielsen and Brian O'Connell, in the April 5th general election. And then those who win those elections then will take their seats on the Racine Unified School Board later in April. Now on to our next question. And we'll start then with Don Nielsen on this one. Act 10, which is ending collective bargaining for Wisconsin public employees, including teachers, has been in effect almost 5 years. Has that been the cause of the strain between Superintendent Hawes and the Racine Education Association that I see evidenced in recent articles in the Racine Journal-Times? And if so, what can be done to promote more constructive communication short of collective bargaining? And do school board members sit in on these meetings? And we'll start with you, Don Nielsen, from District 7.
Act 10 pretty much turned the world upside down as far as unions in the state of Wisconsin for public employees. The only thing that is left for bargaining is basic salaries. Everything else is at the discretion of the administration and the school board. The school board has the final say under Act 10, and the school board has the final say on any changes in the employee handbook through the employee handbook. The contention is whether or not the word consensus between the administration and the union means there has to be a consensus to be brought to have changes brought to the school board, or whether the administration can bring forth things without consensus. My belief is I would prefer to have consensus. I would prefer to have collaboration and both sides looking towards each other, because I think it's better to work together than to be pushing at each other. But the end result is everything is going to come to the school board for a final decision. So I think that the best way to bring it to the school board is consensus. But if it can't be done that way, the school board will have the opportunity in the end to make a final decision.
Thank you, Don Nielsen, on that question. And Brian O'Connell.
Well, Act 10 did turn everything upside down. And we lived through this at the city with municipal employees. It devastated morale because people had to take out of their pocket contributions for benefits that they formerly received through their employer. It also removed the consultation that unions were able to provide. So the challenge is to provide a new form of consultation. It is a project that is going to take some time. And again, a reserve of anger and low morale is there that has to be worked through. What I can tell you is that I've worked with diverse groups. I've tried to foster collaboration and consensus on difficult projects, and I think I bring a skill set that I can apply here and work with the unions.
Okay, thank you, Brian O'Connell. Then we move on to the candidates then from District 6, and Jim Vantarini will start with you on this question. Jim?
I think your question started out at one asking if that was the reason for the tension between Lolly Hawes and the unions. And I guess I wouldn't be able to answer that portion of the question. But most importantly, Act 10 is what it is, and it's in place. And so we need to, Lolly Hawes and needs to, as any good employer, seek advice or opinion from her employees, the teachers, and their representatives. And we as a school board then need to help find a common ground that's, again, to the benefit of our school system. But ultimately, the administrator, the superintendent, is a person in charge. They're the ones who make the final decisions. And I just think that as a school board, you know, we need to help them come to a common ground that benefits the school system.
Okay, thank you, Jim Venturini. And John Heckenlively then from District 6 on this question. John?
Well, yeah, again, I can't go into the exact particulars of the relationship between the superintendent and the schools, at least certainly in terms of how Act 10 relates to it. I was against Act 10 in 2011. I thought it was a bad law then. I still think it's a bad law. I think one of the biggest problems I have with it is that it takes away the rights of working people to negotiate with their employers over working conditions. And when it comes to the working conditions of teachers, that's the learning environment for our students. That's the physical environment within our schools. And so by taking away tools that teachers can use to improve the learning environment of schools, is you're actually hurting students. And so I think that Act 10 has really had a very, as Brian was saying, a really detrimental effect on the morale of public employees. And I know a lot of people who are teachers who the environment in schools has just become so bad over the last 5 years. A lot of people are leaving the profession. And it's a real tragedy because teaching is a profession where you need mentors, where you need people who've been around to help people who are entering the profession.
Okay. Thank you, John Heckenlively. And that's the end of that question. Let's move on to the next question then. The successful November 2014 school board referendum has made funds available for additional technology in unified schools, as well as a new Knapp Elementary School, a new Olympia Brown Elementary School, and an addition to Gifford Elementary School to make it a K-8 school, plus extensive repairs in Unified's other buildings. Thinking about the future, if there were to be a follow-up referendum to provide Racine Unified with additional resources to improve student learning, what should be its focus, e.g. reduce class size in preschool and K-3 programs, increase mental health programs, restoration of full-time librarians and counselors at elementary schools, etc.? We'll start then with, let me see who we'll start with then this time. I guess we'll start with Brian O'Connell.
Boy, there is a lot that could be done and probably a lot that needs to be done. I will completely endorse the idea of having a long-term capital plan for the district, 10-year plan at least. And again, I bring some background and skills in preparing capital plans. I did it for my department at the city, and I did it as part of the mayor's team for the city as a whole. So that's one I would be able to, in a better position to answer after such a plan is in place.
Okay.
I appreciate the need for technology. My wife and I tutor at Roosevelt School, and the kids are very familiar with technology. They go and do computer-based learning, and we're talking about first and second graders. We need to be top flight in technology and the use of technology in the district.
Okay, thank you, Brian. And I have to apologize, too, because I should have started with the other group then on this round, but we'll stick then with finishing this out. Don Nielsen, then, this same question then, and what and the next referendum?
Unfortunately, history has demonstrated repeatedly, not only in Racine, but across the state of Wisconsin, that referendums on operational expenses, such as funding additional staff, are 95% unsuccessful. I think the focus should be on facilities and technology. The first referendum was for $127 million and focused on maintenance and technology, but we will not be able to complete all the backlog of maintenance and do what is needed for technology, because when you buy technology, you have to buy it again in 5 years and buy it again in 5 years. It's an ongoing cost, which you have to have. So I would look to at a referendum that would possibly allow us to take our two worst schools as far as maintenance goes and replace them and get them off the entire maintenance thing and focus on getting schools of the 21st and the 22nd and 23rd century, because that's where the changes have to be. We can't look at where we are today. We have to start building on what is available in the future, and I think that's where the referendum cost would be for facilities that could bring that to be.
Okay, thank you then, Don Nielsen, on that question, and then we'll move on to John Heckenlively from District 6 then on this same question.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Don on the technology thing, is because he's right, is technology changes at such a rapid pace. Is, you know, if you look, is Facebook was invented in 2004, YouTube was 2005. So, I mean, 10 years ago, they didn't really exist, and certainly not in the way they do today. And so, you know, kids who are in elementary school today, who knows what kind of technology they're going to be facing when they're entering the workforce. So I think that technology certainly is one area where we absolutely are going to have to keep up to date on a regular basis. And the other thing is capital needs, is buildings. Is, you know, I mean, we have buildings. Janes is one of the schools in our district. And I think while they're doing a terrific job with the kids, is that building is around when Abraham Lincoln was president of the United States. So obviously we do have a need for new building instruction in Unified.
Okay, and finally on this question, Jim Venturini.
Yeah, I've always said that, you know, one of the responsibilities is to protect the taxpayers' money, but I also understand the need for new facilities and technology. I was asked a question about if I could do one thing that maybe is impossible while on the school board, what would it be? And that was exactly it, to provide new schools for our students. I think the learning environment is so important. And as Don said, you know, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd century, we need to be prepared for the future. And right now, some of these schools, as John said, are so old. So I would support a referendum that would allow us to improve our facilities and provide the technology that our students need and will need in the future.
Okay, and I want to thank all four of you and apologize, too, because I'm going to deny you your closing statements because of we're running out of time here. So to our radio audience, this is your host, Wayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today for this edition of Education Matters, in which I interviewed the two candidates for the District 6 seat on the Racine Unified School Board, John Heckenlively and Jim Venturini, and the two candidates for the District 7 seat on the Racine Unified School Board, Don Nielsen and Brian O'Connell. The top vote getter for each district in the April 5th election will take a seat on the Racine Unified School Board. To the candidates, I wish you the very best in your campaigns. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for the next edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Jack?
Yes, Mary?
Do you know where Brown and Elstrup are?
No, I don't, and I'm still waiting for some of the script to this show. After all, it is their 100th show. Not that I need a script, but I'm not paid that well to write the show, too.
Mr. Benny!
Well, that's just the problem, Jack. Some of the script is missing. We have parts of it, but not the whole thing.
Mr. Benny!
The script is missing? What do you mean, missing? Find it.
Mr. Benny!
Well, it's not exactly missing, Jack. It hasn't been finished.
Mr. Benny!
All right, Dennis. Dennis, what do you want? I'm a little busy here. We don't have a script for today.
Well, that's just it, Mr. Benny. Brown and Alstrup just got back from the Colony House in Trevor. They were celebrating their 100th show a little too long and only got back to finish the script this morning. Listen!
Well, isn't this a fine mess? Mary, are the Dixie Dudes ready to go?
Jack, the Dixie Dudes are always ready to go.
So I've heard. Give that conductor, Bill McGee, the cue to get started. Something upbeat to distract the audience.